afternoon, America. Welcome to the Rocket Caucus. This is Mark Levine. I believe I have on the line Terry D. Kester and Garland Nixon.
Garland's here.
Right
now.
We're working on Terry. Terry's probably being picked up by the police again. Terry has got to stop marching in the streets naked. We're going to get him on the line real soon. Welcome to the Rockets Caucus. We have a lot to talk about, and I know Garland's here just for the first half hour. But the three topics I want to talk about today are the new Pope, what we think about him, what we expect from his past, where we're going with him. I'll talk about why I am both excited and depressed, which I guess is normal for any new beginning. And then Garland, I know you want to talk about the abolishment of the death penalty in Maryland, a really exciting development. And then Terry, something about the U.S. government and the Fourth Reich. I wasn't quite sure. Maybe he's just off his meds again. Terry, do we have you with us yet? All right, he's coming on in just a second. All right,
I think the Fourth Reich grabbed him.
Probably.
He's a political prisoner right now.
I understand. Well, while we're waiting for Terry, let me start on let's start on your topic, Carlin, because I know you have to go soon. The abolishment of the death penalty in Maryland. Our old friend Kirk Bloodsworth. I just say your old friend, the one that you brought on the Rockets Caucus. What, a year or two ago?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. One of the most powerful shows we ever did. Kirk Bloodsworth, an innocent man who was on death row for obviously a crime he did not commit, and he truly was overjoyed. Tell us what happened in Maryland.
Well, basically, and just so for those who don't know, you can Google it. It's Kirk, A-I-R-K.
Oh, Kirk. Bloodsworth. Right.
Kirk.
Okay.
And what happened with Kirk was basically he was accused of the rape and murder of a child. He was found guilty. He spent 2 years on death row, 8 years and 11 months total in prison. And, the science of DNA was available to the criminal justice system. He was the first person in the United States who was exonerated, through DNA evidence. They found that he did not do it. And, recently in Maryland, there's been a lot of arguments. There's been a lot of organizations in Maryland who have been fighting the death penalty. For years, and Kirk's been involved with those. And finally, the legislature was able to get it through. You know, what a lot of people don't know is a couple years ago, they were able to get a legislation through that said you had to have, I think it was an eyewitness, you had to have a videotape confession and DNA evidence for the death penalty. And there were a number of Democrats and progressives who supported that and who took a lot of heat for supporting that because, of course, you know, the it doesn't go far enough argument was made. And what they said was, we'll take what we can get now and we'll continue to fight towards abolishing it. This is a step towards abolishing it. Well, it worked. They got that, and that was a step towards abolishing the death penalty. And lo and behold, a couple more years, and I think this is, again, it's another case made for something that you and I often advocate, and that is, you have to take the baby steps, take what you can get, and incrementalism is not always a bad thing in politics.
You know, it's really shocking, in a sense, how much the tables have turned. I mean, it seems like just yesterday, though I guess it was 10 or 20 years ago, when state after state was adding the death penalty. Maryland,
right.
In fact, was one of them. And the tide has really turned, and I'm not sure why that is. I do think, though, a lot of it has to do with the stories of people like Kirk, because, you know, when people see that an actually innocent man can and does get convicted in our system, it wakes up people. I mean, there are a lot of people out there, let's face it, and I'd probably include myself among them, that don't have a problem with the death penalty in theory. I understand why we took out Osama bin Laden. You know, Timothy McVeigh, doesn't pull my heartstrings, or any of the people who did the recent gun massacres. If they're found sane, you know, that doesn't particularly disturb me. In theory, but in practicality, and Kirk Bloodsworth is the best example of this, poor people don't get access to counsel. We have eyewitnesses who are encouraged to not tell the truth. So in practicality, the vast majority of people, we really can't be sure whether they're guilty or not.
Right, and see, we, you know, you and I may differ on, you know, our you know, whether or not we support capital punishment under any circumstances. However, one thing we all agree on, and I think that's what ultimately has been able to swing the tide in the country, one thing that we can agree on is that there is no instance where you can justify killing a person who didn't commit the crime.
That's for sure. That's right. For sure. One of the things that struck me when Kirk Bloodsworth came on our show is that there were, I believe, 2 10-year-olds, I may have the age wrong, but 2 young children who ID'd him, and even though one of them at first said that the killer, the murderer, the rapist was 6'5", and Kirk is about 5'8". And that might give you an idea that children don't necessarily able to judge height or be good eyewitnesses, particularly when he's putting a lineup and the police tell the child, hey, you must pick one of these.
Hello?
Rather than telling them, hello, Terry, you're on the air. Welcome. We're starting talking about the Maryland death penalty and our show with Kirk Bloodsworth about a year or two ago.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, Maryland has abolished the death penalty. And I was just pointing out that he was convicted based on an ID of some kids who were told by a prosecutor, the killer is in the lineup. You know, keep going till you pick him, when it turns out the real killer wasn't in the lineup at all.
No, and Bloodsworth didn't look anything like the descriptions that were given by supposed witnesses.
Exactly.
I mean, not in height, hair color, anything.
Exactly. So, Garland, I mean, you went from your work at the ACLU. Is this something that is a trend? I mean, is Maryland, I mean, other states, you think, going to follow suit?
Yeah, I think, and there's something else that's going on, too, and that is, I think there is a shift in our country. I mean, if you look at what's happening with gay rights and marriage equality, if you look at what's happening with the legalization of marijuana, though the people on the right in our country don't want to acknowledge it and they're fighting against it, I think there's a swing, and you know, some people may call it a swing to the left. I think there's a swing towards science, a swing towards facts, a swing towards reason in some of these arguments, and away from, you know, xenophobia and homophobia and race, racism and hate. And I think the swing away from these things are what's moving us in the direction of having compassion for other people in our country and you know, using some fairness in our decision-making process.
Terry, given the topic,
you're taking the optimist pill.
I was just going to say, Terry, given the topic that you're going to have in the last part of the hour here, you don't sound as optimistic as Garland is about, you know, Kumbaya and the country ending all these horrors.
Not hardly, unfortunately, because there are so many things in my topic. Basically, is I guess the unseen government. What is going on in our government that the American public isn't even aware of? Some of these things on the surface. And not surface, but I mean, like repealing the death penalty in Maryland are fantastic, but there's so many other things going on that Americans aren't even aware of that is sort of what I would call the real government, which is, in fact, quite frightening.
Well, as usual, the glass is half empty, half full. Garland, how many people in Maryland are on the death row now? I think just 5? Not that many, comparatively to, say, Texas or other states.
No, in fact, there aren't. But keep in mind that in Maryland, in order to be eligible for the death penalty, in order to give someone the death penalty, even before this, by law, you had to have a videotape confession and DNA evidence. And you know, the other thing that brings something important issue. People who are proponents of the DNA, of the death penalty, often try to argue that, well, if the person didn't do it, then the DNA evidence will exonerate them. In most cases, there is no DNA evidence. It's the rare instance of a murder case where there's DNA evidence. You know, where someone, you know, shot 3 or 4 people and they were standing 20 feet away, there is no DNA evidence. And I mean, there has to be, you know, very close contact or maybe, you know, a sexual assault or something where there's DNA evidence. Most of the time, there is none. So it's just the person saying, I didn't do it, and maybe some circumstantial evidence involved.
It's interesting you also mentioned a videotape confession. One of the things that poor people who commit crimes And I just actually heard a seminar on the right to counsel by poor people, the Gideon case, and it clearly mm-hmm. is something that, in fact, my executive producer, Ami Tabe, is looking to work as a criminal defense attorney. And one of the things that he's concerned about, that anyone, frankly, who watches this is concerned about, is that if you're poor, you can't afford a good lawyer. You're often sent to the public defender, and the public defender a lot of people don't know who's on their side, is not necessarily on the side of criminal defendant, because they're going to encourage you to do what 90%+ of all criminal defendants do, and that is plead guilty. So you might be told, hey, give this confession on videotape. If you give it, we can save you from the death penalty. If not, we can get you maybe 20, 25 years of just confess to it. I know you say you're innocent, but if you go to trial, you might end up being convicted and you might end up dying. So go ahead and just plead guilty to a crime you didn't commit. And I think that happens a lot more than we want to admit.
Let Terry go, and then you go.
Okay,
yeah. It's fantastic, you know, that Maryland has taken this step, but again, it doesn't affect the overall reality of our justice system, if you want to call it justice, and I'm not sure I would. I just read an article recently where somewhere around the average of legal aid attorneys, or appointed attorneys to help people who can't afford an attorney, excuse me, please, have up to 300 cases at a time. Now, of course, that's absurd, and there's no way that they can provide any kind of real service in that situation. And also, of course, there's the fact of mandatory sentences, which is, of course, essentially unconstitutional, which takes the power away from the judges so that people are sentenced, you know, three strikes, you're out, et cetera, et cetera. People are sentenced to mandatory sentences that have nothing to do with the size of the crime whatsoever or whether or not they're the cop a plea. That, you know, justice is really, for the average person, justice is simply not available. And I remember just one simple thing I want to throw back in. Way back when the civil rights and the Vietnam War situation, I got arrested a couple of times for protesting the war in Vietnam.
Really? You arrested? How am I not surprised?
Yeah, right. Yeah, and it was for protesting. It wasn't for other crimes that I committed. But each time I was arrested, I would call legal aid or I would call the ACLU, and the reply from both of them, when I was arrested in Chicago, the reply from both of them was, the first question they asked was, do you have any money?
Yeah.
And I said, no, I don't. That's why I'm calling you. He said, well, if you haven't got any money, you can't afford to, you know, get in trouble. So just, you know, calm down yourself and your activism. Which is really kind of heartbreaking at the time, but you know, that's the reality.
Well, let me give Garland a chance to defend his old haunting ground, because he was a board director of the ACLU, and yet
he's the one that turned me down.
Yeah, Garland, why did you turn Terry down?
I was actually on what was called the case review committee, and what happens with the ACLU is there's limited resources,
right.
And keep in mind they're receiving 20-30 letters a day, everything from people who have truly, been run into an instance where they're unfair, to people who are, mentally ill, to people who are guilty and looking for a way, so they get so many cases that the case review committee has to go over them. And what they have to decide are cases that will have a broad impact on the criminal justice system. So rather than just be able to take every case that's unfair, because, my God, in the criminal justice system, 50% of them are unfair, they have to try to take something that's going to have a broad impact so that you can help a lot of people at one time, because you don't really have the resources to help them one at a time. The other thing I was going to say is this. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, are you cleaning something at the time? We hear this puttering around in there.
Oh, I'm wandering around. Oh, the other thing is important. I was a police officer, and I remember being in court and seeing, the public defenders. And this is, literally, they would, in many, many, many instances, minutes before the trial, before when they came in and they were assigned, people, and they'd come in the morning, and sometimes they're late. The court starts in 10 minutes, 10 of 9 or something. They're wandering in, and they've got a stack, and they're calling out names. Billy Smith, is Billy Smith around? Billy Smith comes over. Okay, let's go over this case real quick. Now, you've got to go over 3 cases. Within 10 minutes, you got to defend this person, and you've never seen this before. So they ask the person, what happened? Oh, blah, blah, blah. Okay, James Davis, where are you? And so they're just calling people over with a stack of cases in that are nothing more than folders to them. And in a couple of minutes, they have to go in And the state is trying to prosecute this guy, and the person that's defending the man or woman, and the person that's defending them just saw their case. And in fact, as the prosecution or as the state is making this case, they're still reading through the folder to try to figure out what it is they're defending, which means they're not listening to the prosecution. There's no justice there. There's no defense there.
No. And you add to that the privatization of our prisons, you know, and the money that's being made off of imprisoning people, and the fact that we have the highest percentage of people in prisons of any country in the world, you know, is astounding. Also, one of the highest percentage, one of the few countries that still has a death penalty, and even if they, you know, rescind it in Maryland, they'll probably extradite them over to Virginia so Virginia can kill them, because Virginia still loves to do it.
Colin, are you fixing your plumbing there? Is that what the sounds we hear are?
No, there's all kind of stuff going on here, Mark. I can't tell you, or DHS will come get me and take me away.
Apparently, Garland is shipping immigrants across the border. I guess I don't know what you're doing, but where do we go from here? I mean, is this just state by state? Look, Maryland was never one of the biggest offenders either. Texas apparently executes half of all Americans, and
all Americans. I think they've killed 150 million people.
Well, I meant half of all Americans that are executed. I don't mean they haven't quite gotten around to killing one out of every two of us, though. You know, Texas.
Texas plans to.
I'm sure you once lived there, right, Terry?
Oh, I did. I did. I lived in Houston, and I've worked in Fort Worth and Dallas, and I've been chased by police in every one of those cities.
So do people in Texas just say, "Hey, let's go kill somebody"? I mean, is that how?
That's a shining light
for
Texas.
I can go on for Texas forever, but let me just put it simply.
Why such a bloodlust, shall we say, in Texas?
Yeah. Texas is the only place I've been in my whole life where a cop has followed me around a department store because I was buying a shirt for half an hour, not more than 2 feet away from me. You know, Texas is the only state in the union where I've been run off the road on my motorcycle by Texans who just don't like motorcyclists. Texas is a wonderful place, trust me.
Motorcyclists?
It sounds wonderful, Terry.
I knew they didn't like hippies, but I didn't think it was motorcyclists that was the problem.
No, they ran me off on my motorcycle.
Ah, okay. I think it was you, Terry, not the motorcycle.
No. I was nothing but a pacifist and a sweet guy with long hair.
Texas. That might be against the law.
That'll do it in Texas.
Yes, it will. Trust me.
You probably had flowers on your jeans or something like that.
I did.
Well, you know, that's grounds for incarceration, I believe, in Texas.
Or worse, in Texas.
And Texas, too. I don't know if it's still true, but it used to be the time, which actually at the time I liked, is the only place you could drive with an open bottle and keep on drinking.
Nice, while on a motorcycle, which is hard to do. You need to balance.
Great balance and great skill. Yeah, that's why I learned to dance.
It's very hard not to spill your drink.
Yeah,
well, we have gone from the sublime to the ridiculous. Let's try, after the break, to go back to the sublime, because I made sort of a prediction. I thought that the Catholic, not that I really knew what was going on. I don't have too many close contacts in there. Admittedly, I did have a listening device in the Vatican, but they swept it out, so I couldn't hear it. But I actually thought, given that 40% of the world's Catholics are in Latin America, that they might just pick a Latin American pope. Let's talk about who the new Pope Francis is, because I think there is good, and I think there is bad. And, I guess that's the yin and yang of everything. Terry, in the last part, we're definitely going to get to your...
The real American government.
The real American government.
Right.
I shudder to even think about what that might be. We'll be right back with more of the Rockets Caucus. If you want to call Lynn, it's 202-889-9797. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to the Rockets Caucus. This is Mark Levine with Terry DeKester and Garland Nixon. And I want to move on to the new pope, because white smoke came out of the Vatican sooner than I think a lot of people predicted on the second day. And lo and behold, it was the guy who was the runner-up to last pope, which I guess makes sense. But more it makes sense because it is the first Latin American pope, the first pope of the Americas, the first pope outside of Europe in 1,000 years. And given that the majority of the world's Catholics live outside of Europe, only one quarter or so live in Europe, that makes sense to me. He took the name Pope Francis, named after St. Francis of Assisi, who very famously gave up a lucrative career in merchant trading to serve the poor. And to the extent that Pope Francis seems very, very caught, very concerned about the poverty and the world and his own, the Catholic Church is talking about his own humility and not living in the palace and taking a bus to work. caring about the poor is vital, and I'm very glad and pleased to have a pope whose main concern is the poor. And I want him to focus there, because when he's focused on other things, it hasn't been quite so good. He, of course, was a leading opponent to marriage equality in Argentina, calling it the devil's work. And certainly he's not someone who would support women priests or contraception or anything like that. Finally, there are some rumors that he hotly denies that he collaborated with the dictatorship of Argentina in getting rid of some leftist priests. We're going to want to find out whether that's true or not. So, Garland, you have to go soon, so I'll let you start. What are your thoughts on Pope Francis?
Well, you guys go ahead. I'm just Googling something right now. If I'm not mistaken, he is like the son of Italian immigrants. Details on the exact details on that.
All right, we'll leave Garland to his Googling. He is the son of Italian immigrants. Go ahead, Terry.
Well, he's Franciscan as well.
That's true.
Which is significant.
No, not Franciscan. He's a Jesuit.
Jesuit, yeah.
He's a Jesuit.
And I think there's really some major opportunity here. I mean, one, we have to keep it in perspective. The Pope is not a businessman and an administrator in the way people would like to think. He is meant to be a spiritual leader. And obviously there are things that we might disagree on views that he would take, you know, such as same-sex marriage and things like that. But at the same time, he does seem to be a man that is more focused on the people than the institution of the church. And, whether or not he collaborated and to what degree he collaborated in Argentina with the dictatorship, I mean, part of that was obviously surviving as a church official. And he, in fact, has said or claims, and apparently it's documented, that not only does he try to help the poor, but he actually hid people from the Argentinian government. I'm sure he was caught in a situation that was extremely difficult to manage and how to survive and walk through it and be of service to his parishioners, etc. But the fact that he may have hidden people from the government is probably certainly a high risk for him. I mean, it could have led to his death. You know, so he seems to be a good person. If nothing else, it seems to be a bit of a spiritual shift of the Catholic Church. Again, focusing more on the people rather than the institution.
Yeah,
and we have to remember too that because of that, the cardinals, at least as I understand the Vatican, and I don't claim to be an insider at all, but the cardinals are one who are going to be running the church per se, and so a lot of the problems are going to still persist. But I still think it's a good step.
I think the charges against him, frankly, now that he's pope, I guarantee you there'll be 100 reporters in Argentina and around the world who are going to look into those details. I have no idea what's true or what's not true, but I really believe the truth will come out, whatever it is. And frankly, I hope he's exonerated. I hope he wasn't. I hope his strong denials are true. I don't want a spiritual leader who was compromised in that way. Again, he's not my spiritual leader, but he is a world leader. Listen, Catholicism is the single largest religion on Earth, on planet Earth. Christianity is the largest, and Catholicism is the largest percentage of Christians. So he does play a major role. And, you know, Pope Benedict was in Hitler Youth. It's interesting. We think of popes as above the world, but they had to live in the world they were in. Again, I really hope it's proven that he didn't do anything with the Argentine dictatorship.
Yeah, and we can't expect him to be perfect. I mean, we simply can't.
But we can expect him to be more pure than average.
We expect him most of all is how he behaves now and what he does now. And I don't mean to say that we forget anything, but, you know, he's in a position now to make a major contribution. And it's what he does today that matters the most.
And of course,
if he doesn't do something today that is helpful to the human race in general and to the Catholics in general, then we have reason to scream.
One of the first things he did after becoming pope was he asked the people to bless him, which was a departure from protocol, but seemed eminently fitting. Go ahead, Colin. You're done with your Google search.
Okay, here's the thing. There's a couple things. And I'm not saying this is good or bad. It's just a matter of fact. Okay. The guy's last name is what? Bergoglio?
Something like that.
And he's the son of an Italian immigrant.
Right.
From this perspective, he's Italian. I mean, he is...
He's born in Argentina. I mean, I don't know that he's more Italian than a first-generation American belongs...
calling Jimmy Hoffa an Italian?
Here's my point, and that is, ultimately, when it came down to it, I mean, there is... And let me... use America as an example. In America, the people will say, oh, yes, Marco Rubio, he's Latino, and we've got a Latino running for whatever, and blah, blah, blah. Marco Rubio is Spanish. When the Spanish people, he does not look like the guy out there who's mowing the lawn or from El Salvador or Mexico. He's not the short, dark-skinned.
He's not a person of color, to be sure.
A member of the indigenous tribe.
That's true.
From South America.
And neither is Francis.
One of them. When the Spanish left, such as they did, they left a class of Spanish, of European Spanish people who did not genetically mix with the indigenous tribes and who still run a lot. If you look in Mexico, the president of Mexico never looks like the Mexicans. If you watch Mexican soap operas, those are Spanish people. They do not look like the Mexicans that we see out here on a daily basis. Now, my point being this. When it comes down to it, it's still, you know, and I may be out on a limb, but this is how I feel, there's still that colonialism. When the Italians said, okay, we'll pick somebody from the Americas, but darn sure it ain't going to be one of those indigenous tribe people. It's
yep.
going to be an Italian person of Italian descent. It's colonialism. It's there was a ruling class either left behind or brought into various countries to maintain the colonialistic power. Today it's the same thing. I'm not saying this guy is good or bad. This is not a comment on whether or not he's a good or bad or hope. This is a comment on people understanding that it's a fraud when we keep hearing that Marco Rubio is representing the Latinos or that this guy is, you know, representing the Americas. I mean, if I, you know, mail Terry a letter and say, hey, Terry, you know, that's all Terry's letter, I mailed it to him. It came from me.
Yeah, but Garland, look, I think he can be a transitional figure. Look, the two-thirds of all the cardinals that voted in the Vatican conclave were European. And of that, the largest contingent was Italian. So they had to please that group. But the new Pope Francis can appoint a whole bunch of new cardinals. And so maybe he's a transitional figure. I have a feeling there's not going to be a pope from Italy for a long time to come. I suspect Pope Francis will be appointing people of color and people from Latin America. Outside. Now, listen, Argentina is the whitest Latin American state. It is often considered by other Latin Americans to be the least native, the least mestizo. You're all right about that, but I still think it can be a transition where he could appoint popes from Asia, popes from Africa, popes from Mexico. I mean cardinals, who can then choose the next pope. So I still think he can be a transitional figure, even though I absolutely concede the point that he's hardly your typical Latin American.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's grossly unfair. I really do, Garland, because I mean, for what we only know is the man has been born, raised in the Argentinian environment and culture, and he has also chose to be a priest, and it also has been, you know, been part of that population and very much involved with the poor people his entire life. So to say whatever his roots were are really kind of irrelevant compared to what he has done with his life for, you know, but he's 60s. How old is he? He's quite 68 or something.
I know.
Like
I think
that.
He's in his 70s.
70s?
I think he's like 76 or something.
Yeah,
like
he spent his whole life immersed in a culture of serving the poor, which is much more significant than where his parents came from, his color, or his DNA, or whatever. His life has been dedicated to working with them.
And frankly, that's the thing I like best about him. The thing that pleases me the most, that gives me the most hope. We have not had a worldwide voice, a strong voice for ending poverty.
Amen.
In America, in the world, anywhere. Frankly, the Catholic Church is supposed to be all about ending poverty, and there's a lot of good work they do, but I don't remember Pope Benedict talking very much about the poor, maybe a little bit. Pope John Paul II, terrific, powerful pope, probably the single most important person to bring down communism, but it didn't seem like the poorest were his primary concern. This is a pope who's made it very clear that his first, second, and third concern is the poor people of the world, and I like to have that voice. I strongly disagree with him, no question, on gay rights and rights for women, but I really hope that he keeps up the focus on poverty and not on all these other issues in the church.
Me too.
Well, I'd say this. Here's the fact is this, guys. We're talking about two completely different issues. Totally and absolutely different issues. So it's not that I don't understand. There's the issue of the individual pope and what he brings to the table, right? But certainly. And that's a separate and distinct issue from what I'm talking about. what I'm saying, talking about is more like this. And I've seen this before in America, and I've seen it happens around the world. And I say it is related to colonialism in general. And that is, there is some kind of an inference in here that the Vatican reached out to the South Americans, basically, and got one of theirs, that they went outside, that they reached out for diversity, when that's not the fact at all.
Yes, it is, I think it is, too.
When what I'm saying is this, they weren't going to choose some guy who's a member of the short indigenous tribes of South America. That wasn't happening. And what I'm saying is, and what's going on is, they're pretending as though they did when they didn't, and it was not going to happen. No way. There was not going to be a black African pope. There was
not yet
some member of the indigenous South American tribe. So just say, look, we chose an Italian guy.
But this,
but don't pretend where there's diversity when it's not real.
Oh, God, I think this paves the way.
There has not been a non-European.
Exactly.
There's been like one other non-European pope in the history of the church.
Obviously,
they run beyond where they've gone culturally.
In 1,200 years, there has not been a non-European pope. There was a Syrian pope in the year 700 something.
Yeah. I mean, this is a huge difference. It's a huge difference. Now, you're just talking about his, you know, genetic traits and his, you know, cultural past, which is absurd. His life has been in South America. His life has been in Argentina from the time he was a little kid to now being 70 years old and having served in the church and the community for decades. You know, that'd be like saying you've never been with the ACLU, so therefore, you know, you're only with the ACLU for a short time, so it doesn't really matter, because after all, what you really are is a cop, not an ACLU person.
But see, what's obvious is this. You guys don't understand what I'm talking about.
No, I think I do, Garland.
Let me tell you why I say that. Because you keep reverting the subject back to him as an individual.
That's what matters.
If you understood what I'm talking about,
what I'm talking about... Obama being an individual is what matters.
No, but you're both okay. You're both right. Look,
it has to do it from your perspective. What I'm saying is this: I'm talking about something different. That's not what I'm talking about.
No, I understand, I understand what you're talking about, Garland. But I think he's a transition to what you're talking about. I think they had to go with an Italian immigrant to South America first. Listen, the Catholic Church just ended their excommunication of Galileo. What 10, 20 years ago? They're not exactly a speedy institution. They've just agreed in the 1990s that the Earth goes around the sun. You know, that's progress for the Catholic Church. I have very low expectations of the Catholic Church, and to me, this was beyond my low expectations. Now, I believe that the new Pope Francis, I think you'll find, we'll find out 10, 20 years, will appoint more cardinals from Africa, from Mexico, more people of color. No, I don't think he'll appoint a woman priest, though I'd love to see one. I'd love to see a woman pope, frankly. I think it would change the institution forever.
Yeah.
But it may be a baby step, but I think it is a significant step, and I do think that before, in my lifetime, I predict I will see a pope of color.
And not only that, the thing that's really significant about this, and this refutes Garland's point of view entirely, is the Latino Spanish community is enormous, the South American Spanish community is enormously excited and touched by this change. So it has enormous implications for those who are Catholic and who are Hispanic and who are South American. They feel a huge step has been taken. So it doesn't matter what you and I really feel.
Well, some do, some don't. I mean, I'm sure there are people that with Garland's point of view in South America who say, well, they picked a white Italian pope.
And I say that because, let's face it, in the black community, let me give you an example. In the black community, an example would be Soledad O'Brien, who I found out was black. I didn't know it.
Yeah, she's half. She's half black. She's half Latino. I know Soledad personally, actually. I went to school with her.
She was touted as black. I'll put it like that. We have a black CNN correspondent.
She's half black.
Right. And what a lot of black people in the community said, yeah, hooray. If you could tell she was black, she probably wouldn't have been there. So the fact of the matter is, you bring in a person who is, you know, who, for all intents and purposes, no one could ever figure out that she's black, and you put her in there and say,
oh, no, Garland. I mean, Soledad is as black as Barack Obama. Now, wait a minute. Soledad O'Brien is as black as our president, who everyone says is black. He's only half black. Soledad O'Brien is half black. She's half Latino. I know her, and she's very open about her ethnicity and who she is.
Garland's been taking some strange pills today. I love Garland, but holy cow.
I mean,
optimism to I don't know what this is.
I mean, Soledad has done.
And I really do see what's happening, even with the discussion of Soledad O'Brien. For some reason, I don't know. I'm not 100% sure why. What I'm saying is not really getting through very well here.
No, but let's get on to my topic.
No. Before we do, let's give Garland a final chance here. Go ahead.
Yeah, when I mentioned Soledad O'Brien, here is my point. There are a lot of black people who say, you can't get on TV, you know, the odds of you getting on TV are dramatically low unless you're very, very light-skinned and you look very, very white. And that has been, it is getting better now, but that has been the case, you know, overwhelmingly for many, many years. And that's the same principle I'm talking about within that. And even though some Latino people may say, hooray, well, that doesn't change because there was black people said, hooray, we got a black person with these. And they look and the person was, you know, they didn't look anything like them. And they knew in their heart that they couldn't get on TV because they looked too ethnic.
But there are lots of black people on the news today. Lemon, there's
the person that matters so much. I mean, you know, you've got a purely black person in Clarence Thomas. Is he what the black community wants to see in the Supreme Court? Absolutely not. It's the person that matters, not all of this other stuff.
I am convinced now that it's an issue that you guys, for some reason, don't understand.
No,
because of your responses.
And okay,
that's not to say it's good or bad, but I'm convinced that you guys.
Well, you know, we're going to have to revisit this because I think I do understand where you're going, but I just don't think you're right.
Yeah, we disagree.
I mean, look, I'm not praising the Catholic Church as a progressive institution. Please let me be clear here. I mean, they called gay people getting married the devil. All right, these are not my favorite people, but I recognize when the Boy Scouts took a step forward. They're extremely regressive, but they took a step forward. They haven't even done anything about it yet. I can recognize when institutions that are way behind the eight ball take a step forward, even though it doesn't come near close to where my own views are.
Absolutely.
And I also think there's lots of black people on television.
That's because Mark and I are pure optimists.
Yeah. Okay, guys.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Garland. I know you have to go somewhere. And when we come back, I want to hear about Terry's topic, which is, of course, his pessimism, which he always brings to the front, about the Fourth Reich in government. I don't even know what that means. We'll get right back to more of the Raucous Caucus right after this. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine. I know we have Terry DeKester. Garland had something to do or got so upset he walked off. No, he had something to do. I'm sure of it. He told me beforehand, so it was not the topic. Terry, you know, for such optimism about the Catholic Church, and now you're going to pessimism about the U.S. government? Is that right?
Well, let me put it this way, Mark, and I've had a strange confluence of reading and studying in the last few weeks, and it began with reading Albert Schweitzer's biography, and his pointing out at the time prior to World War II, and I think it's true today as well, that he was living in an era where thought is condemned, and I think that essentially defines the cultural zeitgeist in America today. Excuse me a second.
You've been watching too many reality shows.
Yeah. And, you know, just thought for the most part is condemned, except for on the Raucous Caucus, of course.
Of course.
Yeah. And then besides that, I've also begun to reread, which I hadn't read in quite a while, Albert Speer's Inside the Third Reich. Fascinating book. And to remind the listeners, Albert Speer is basically Hitler's right-hand man. He was not necessarily a racist himself, but he just was caught up in and using his expertise and advancing his career to basically build the Third Reich.
Yeah, he's hardly a good guy. By the way, don't confuse Albert Speer and Albert Schweitzer. They're two very different Alberts. So
as
you're reading, don't pick up one book and think it's the other.
No, but he has an interesting chapter on his thought process or lack of thought process of what led him to be in the Nazi Party and become part of that, and he admits very openly, he's one of the few people at the Nuremberg trial that accepted his guilt and admitted that he was part of something that was absolutely horrible. And then I was reading a little bit of Amnesty Shales, or whatever, how she pronounces her last name, a most frightening right-wing columnist, and with Bloomberg and formerly with the Wall Street Journal, et cetera, et cetera. And at the same time, I've been reading about what's been going on in our government that people don't know about and don't pay attention to. And, Mark, you may have heard about this, but this is astounding to me, and it's what I mean. There's so much going on underneath the radar in the United States that is literally changing how our country and our culture functions that people aren't even aware of. And here's a
give me some examples.
Here's a classic example. The Republican members of the Senate Appropriations Committee have quietly added provisions that would permanently, this is key, protect some gun rights favored by Republicans to a financing bill that would keep the government running through the end of the next year.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's what they did on D.C. The District of Columbia, where I proudly sit right now, wanted its citizens to be able to vote and have representative Congress, mm-hmm. like you would think would be allowed in any democracy on earth,
yeah.
the people in its capital. And the Republicans said, all right, we'll let you have a partial vote in the House, but not the Senate. We'll let you have it as long as you agree that you can have guns, legally for every child, man, woman, and child in D.C. That there'd be you have no right as a government to restrict your own gun laws, with a party that supposedly believes in local rights, saying nope, you can't choose those things. So now what are they doing with gun rights on finances?
Well, this is fantastic. I mean, there's about four different things here. One, they're going to prohibit the Bureau of Alcohol and Tobacco and Firearms and Explosives from requiring gun dealers to conduct annual inventories to ensure that they have not lost guns or had them stolen.
So we're going to take the toothless tiger and remove his gums.
Exactly right.
Okay.
And it goes on, they're going to prevent the ATF from refusing to renew a dealer's license for, quote, lack of business, when in fact what they're doing is selling guns under the table, as it were. And they have a license to do that because the ATF can't go in and check and see what they're really doing. And they're going to require, this is astounding, there's two other things here that are astounding. They're going to require the agency, the ATF, to attach a disclaimer to data about guns to indicate that that data cannot be used to draw broad conclusions about firearms-related crimes. And it goes on and on like that.
Yeah, do not
Democrats,
look at our studies. Well, yeah. Our academic studies. Ignore the actuality. Ignore
right.
reality or else.
Right. And the Democrats have agreed to this.
Now, wait. No, wait. No.
Yes.
Where?
Yes.
In the Senate? In the House? Where?
Yes, in the Senate. They have agreed to this.
Who has? Harry Reid has?
I don't know the names of them, but they have agreed. It's on the committee at this point, the Senate Appropriations Committee. They have agreed to it because they wanted to prevent further permanent changes to the laws regarding the ATF. Now, you add to that, and again, the American public...
That's an important thing because, we live in a jurisdiction surrounded... D.C. obviously has no representation, but Virginia right. and Maryland both have two Democratic senators who need you to call them
yes.
At 202-224-3121. I've memorized the Capitol switchboard number. To let them know that this is crazy.
Yeah, it is.
Just what we need in America, more unlicensed gun dealers selling more weapons of mass destruction. That's a great idea.
Yeah,
that's crazy. I wasn't surprised Republicans brought it up. But other than Joe Manchin of West Virginia, I'm shocked that any Democrat would support this nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the financial package that they get through to keep the government going will be signed by President Obama.
Gotta veto it if it's got those gun bills in it. Gotta veto it.
These issues will not be brought up. Then I'll give you another example. One is, you probably heard of this, the poisoning, the contamination that has gone on through steroid injections that have now been given over to 14,000 people that we know of.
Yeah, they got meningitis because of an unregulated compounding place
yeah.
in Framingham, Massachusetts.
Yeah, as 670 people are sick with it now. There's supposedly no cure. There's been 44 yeah. deaths.
48 now.
48, wow. And the reason is simply because years ago, the FDA was unfunded to look at compounding pharmacies
right.
and to inspect them.
That's
now,
right.
again, nobody knows about this or knew about this. This is done under the table. It's not public. And our government is being eroded in so many ways. You add to that the absurdity of President Obama's stand on drones being used in the United States to kill United States citizens. You have a government that people aren't really even aware of.
All right, I'm going to stop you there, because I agree with you on the gun legislation. I agree with you on we've got to regulate pharmaceutical manufacturers. I mean, of course we do. The FDA needs power over there. But the drone policy on U.S. citizens seemed to me to be, first of all, hypothetical, because he hasn't done it. But secondly, he said it would only be done in cases of imminent danger where someone was in combat, where the ordinary police forces were unable to do it. It sounds to me like September 11th is the only example I can think of where that could ever ever happen. But I would hope that if someone hijacked a plane and was, you know, plunging it toward an office building, that that would be an unusual circumstance that we could maybe do something about.
You don't use a drone for that.
What does it matter if it's a drone or a manned pilot? I've never understood the difference.
It matters essentially because the drone's single purpose. There's only two purposes for drones at this point. One is surveillance,
right?
You know, and observation, which
right.
Now darn near every police department has. And
I don't think every police department has a drone, but okay.
Well, maybe not. Only, but most, anyway, six don't. And but the idea that the President of the United States, this is coming carried over from the Bush administration, from the Star Chamber, you know, has the authority to kill people, including United States citizens, with or without drones. I don't care if they used, you know, bazookas.
Well, good, because I think that's the point. It's not drones that are the issue. The
right.
issue is whether the President of the United States has authority
exactly.
to kill an American citizen in the United States of America without due process. That's the heart of the issue.
It is. And, I mean, this is... And even if Obama is the most decent, wonderful, rational human being in the world, the very fact of setting this precedent, of giving this power to the presidency so that when Mitt Romney gets in, he can take out 47% of Americans with drones, you know, is absolutely frightening. And again, because of my reading in the last few weeks and the small, under-the-table things that were happening in Germany at the time, prior to Hitler's rise to power...
They weren't small...
They weren't small at all.
I mean, I don't care what year you want to mention in Germany from 1919 to 1940. None of those actions were small. I'm not saying we shouldn't be careful and be worried about our government, but I really think comparing it to Germany is a wild stretch.
Well, my point is, yeah, maybe and maybe not, because my point is the German people did not know what was really going on initially. They really didn't.
That's true. I accept that.
The government
some did,
under Hitler
some didn't.
Was setting up this operation, these plans, these institutions, these means to turn their country into the nightmare that it became.
Yeah, but Terry, I mean, look, there's Tea Party people that have called Obama Hitler. I don't like that reference. To me, there's enough badness around the globe. I mean, North Korea has just threatened to nuke the United States. All right. I mean, to compare our look, if you want to condemn a particular American government policy, go right ahead. It's a free country. But I think when you use that comparison, it harms your own argument because it ain't near that. It doesn't approach anything like that.
It doesn't approach what Germany became.
Or even what Germany was in 1933, or in 1930, or in 1928.
But the whole idea that I'm really talking about here is that the American public is simply not aware of what our government is really doing.
That's a solid point. And talking about the gun regulation, talking about the fact that our FDA can't make sure that drugs in America are safe and effective are good, solid points. And certainly we should make sure that any authority of the President of the United States to take out an American citizen should be so sharply constricted that you have to really work a difficult hypothetical to get one. All that's true. I think when you run to the Germany stuff, you lose the force of your argument, which is pretty strong.
It's interesting you say that because, you know, that's what everybody in Germany said too. There were people, of course, that were screaming, there were people in Germany, of course, screaming like crazy about what's happening. There were other people going saying, well, it's not really that bad. And they were saying, you know, well, he doesn't really mean what he says, and they're not going to really misuse that policy.
But Terry, come
on. Just went on and on and on.
People will compare, I mean, Rush Limbaugh compared Obamacare to Hitler. The Tea Party had Hitler signs. I don't think, and I did not like George W. Bush, that's for sure. And I don't think he's legitimately elected by the American people. But I still think the Hitler analogy is, I don't think anyone should use it unless you're really facing genocide. Now, if you want to talk about Assad in Syria, who's massacring hundreds of thousands of people, now we're getting close.
But you notice,
North Korea gulags. But
you know, I'm not comparing anything to Hitler.
I'm comparing the
thought process that doesn't exist in this country, the critical thinking that doesn't exist, the education that doesn't exist, the media that does not report what is really going on, the government that does not tell you what is really going on. You know, if it weren't for a few small people, and let's face it, we are not getting the voice of the whole, not getting the whole country to listen to us
yet. We will, though.
I said yet.
All right.
You know, there is so much going on that the American public doesn't even know about.
That's true, but is that any different from the way it was 10, 20, 50, 100 years ago?
I think it is in terms of the scope and the scale. I really do. I mean, when the defunding of agencies across the country in all kinds of areas, from education to FDA to ATF, the defunding, the permanence of laws that have been set up, including the gun or non-gun control laws, the permanence that has been established. Obviously, we know what's happening with the Supreme Court because that gets a lot of play. But, you know, it's just like there's this whole tide of events going on that is taking the government into directions that are extremely dangerous. And nobody seems to be doing anything about it except you and me, kid.
Well, you know, I mean, even Rand Paul, who I disagree with on a large number of issues, I mean, he devoted a whole filibuster to the issue.
Yeah.
I'm glad he did. I'm glad he drew attention to it. But I also think, you know, I think when we overhype hypothetical dangers and we don't talk about the real dangers. I mean, when you talk about people dying because our Food and Drug Administration can't regulate drugs in America, that is a serious problem happening today, and people are dying. I mean, I can't agree with you more on that one, but the hypothetical idea that the President of the United States is going to, you know, drone, I think Rand Paul said he was going to drone Jane Fonda in a cafe or something. I mean, come on. It's just not going to happen. And I don't want to mix real serious dangers with what I think are more, conspiracy theories.
Let me put it to you this way, you know, because I know we haven't got much time, Gandhi. Did you happen to read the wonderful, wonderful book, this thoroughly researched book on Area 51 that came out? I forget her name, the female author.
I have not, but I have no doubt it was a nuclear testing site and not an alien landing.
No, that's not the point.
Okay.
But you should, you know, the whole point is for 50-some years, you know, the American public had no idea what was going on. The Atomic Energy Commission that ran it initially had no oversight whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Even Bill Clinton, the President of the United States, when he went there, was not allowed to go into certain areas. Now, why would we assume that with all of that going on that the American public didn't know about, you know, that we are not in the same situation today?
If we can end this show with a call for more transparency at all levels of government, I could not agree with you more, and I think that's a nice way to end the raucous conference.
And I think we should have the Pope consider being the President of the United States.
Not going to happen. Hey, no. Terry, thanks for coming here on the Rocks Caucus. I want to thank Garland Nixon, who came on earlier. Next up is going to be a fascinating show on Iran.
What is going on there?
Thank you, Terry. What is going on there? How close are they developing a nuclear weapon? What should the United States, if anything, do about it? What about dissidents in Iran? We're going to explore it from all points of view, all topics. You don't want to miss what's coming up in just 30 seconds or so right here on the Inside Scoop. We'll be right back right after this.